Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. North Carolina seems to have a love-hate relationship with the film industry. Incentives, which are the lifeblood of attracting that industry anywhere outside Hollywood, wax and wane on a tide of political thought. After years of ups and downs resulting from these battles over incentives and controversial laws that push productions away from the state and the pandemic and a writer's strike, film and TV production here is on a growth curve. Last year, film productions generated more than $302 million in direct in-state spending and marked the second largest year-end total since the launch of the state's current film grant program 10 years ago. This month, Governor Josh Stein announced the most recent film grant awardees, with productions estimated to create nearly 4,000 jobs and result in at least $131 million in spending in locations across the state. And Charlotte has recently been a beneficiary. We served as a backdrop to the Netflix series The Hunting Wives, now confirmed for a second season. Feature films like Roofman, starring Channing Tatum, scheduled for release next month, shot here, and Bravo's Top Chef, currently shooting here in Charlotte. But despite the notoriety and the jobs these productions may bring to the state, despite what they might spend while shooting, there are still questions about whether the incentives provided make it all a wash. So this hour, we take a closer look at that and how our state benefits, or not, from being Hollywood's backlot. We're joined by Guy Gaster. He's director of the North Carolina Film Office. Susie Hamilton is president and CEO of the Film Partnership of North Carolina. And Lauren Vilchick is an independent film producer, entertainment attorney, and assistant dean of graduate studies at the School of Filmmaking at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, and one of the founders of the Film Partnership of North Carolina. Welcome to you all. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Good morning. So, Guy, let me start with you. Film production numbers in the state are up. Is that because incentives are up?
It certainly is. I mean, this is one of the industries you talked about, the back and forth and how lawmakers feel about the film industry in North Carolina. And the one thing that they all can agree upon is that this industry certainly passes the but-for test, and if not for the incentive, then the number of productions that would be in the state would be much, much smaller, and the overall economic impact from the industry would be much smaller.
And why should we care?
The caring comes from, this is an industry that is an economic driver across the state. It's one that, when we look at the incentives, that money, once it's announced, is being spent in the local communities right away. If it hasn't already been started to have the spending there, it creates jobs immediately for the film professionals. We're sitting here educating, as Lauren can vouch. We've got programs in our higher education institutions that are producing. It's an area that students want to be in, that young folks are interested in being in, and having a place for them to work in North Carolina, thereby staying here, becoming residents, paying those taxes, that is important. And there's something to be said for the byproducts of the industry. We've certainly seen strong tourism numbers. We can't put a dollar figure on that, but anecdotally, we know it is there. When you look at a show like The Summer I Turned Pretty that has filmed in our state for three seasons now, and the amount of cachet that the state has had, the amount of visitors that are coming to see those spots in southeastern North Carolina, as well as in Chapel Hill where it filmed, those are all, that's all money going into our economy.
And I'm told that the house used for the hunting wives has become a local tourist attraction here, even though it's supposed to be in Texas. I mentioned that last year, a film and television production in the state generated more than $302 million in direct in-state spending. But how, Guy, does that compare to the amount that the state is putting forward in terms of these incentives and tax reductions?
Sure. So the program that the state has as our main recruiting tool is a rebate. It's a 25% rebate. So for every dollar spent within the state, 25 cents is going back to the production. So if we're talking about $300 million, that's 1.2 billion being spent in the state. So those are the kind of sorry, if we're at 300 million, I did the math the wrong way. You're looking at just under 1 million, 100 million being spent by the state. So it takes money to make money. I think that there's a reason that saying has stuck around. And again, as I've said, without this incentive, that 300 million would not be spent here in North Carolina.
So, Susie, you used to be in politics. I know you were a state representative in the legislature, and that you were a member of the first Cooper administration years ago. And now you're running the Film Partnership of North Carolina, which is a nonprofit. The numbers, it seems to me, kind of speak for themselves. There is return on investment for these incentives. So why the wax and wane? Why the on again, off again approach at the legislature over time to these
Yeah,
incentives?
I think the timing of it is pretty critical when you look back. I was there from 2011 to 2017, and it was during that period that we saw a lot of tumultuous activity as it relates. When I came in 2011, there was a steaming debate going on about incentives at all in North Carolina, not just incentives related to film, but the programs like JDIG and JMAC and economic development programs that exist throughout statutes in North Carolina. So there were a lot of organizations more on the conservative side of things that were interested in eliminating incentives across the board, not offering incentives anywhere. And film in particular became a focus, I think, mostly because the film industry moves from project to project. It's not as if you can count a full-time employee, a full-time position that has been created as a result of the incentive like you can with others. But that is because of the nature of the industry. Again, we move from project to project. We're not building a building. We're not creating widgets. We're not producing or manufacturing, material and things that would lead to full-time employment. Our full-time employment stems from business coming to the state to keep the professionals in the film and television production industry busy on a regular basis.
Yeah,
I
because
often
when
liken it to an engineer or lawyer only being as good as their next gig. They
yeah,
got
but
one client.
although Wilmington has become kind of a Hollywood to the east, they have studios and television shows are regularly produced there for long
They
periods of
are.
time.
Yep. And I'm pleased to say, though, this year, Wilmington has not seen the lion's share of production. The lion's share of production has moved more toward the Piedmont region through the work that Lauren is producing, as well as what we've seen happening in Charlotte as well. But you are correct. The nexus, the start of it, now going on 40 years ago, was really in the eastern region.
So, Lauren, you moved here from Hollywood. We're going to talk
I
about that
did.
a little bit later on. But for many reasons, most movies are now made outside of Hollywood
Yeah.
because they want to be in the real locations or things that look like the real locations. So producers are always looking for backdrops. They're always looking for a reason to choose one location over another. And you say that you moved here to make movies and that, quote, North Carolina is a great place to do that. It's beautiful, you say, with a variety of landscapes, four seasons, and favorable weather. People are friendly and happy to see you here. The logistics are good, and you have this army of students, yours probably, who are ready to practice their craft in the real world. We're going to talk about the army of students a little bit later on, but despite all the attributes, what sets us apart? I mean, we have similar topography to Georgia and South Carolina. Why do they choose North Carolina over the other two, or even Virginia or Tennessee?
Well, I came here when the incentives were at play, and then within 2 years, they went away. So I'm glad to see that they're back. I think it is absolutely the case that a lot of the productions, including my own, would have a very difficult time being here without them, because they are popular within the other states in the nation and internationally. So it is the economics. The industry is changing. And you don't need Hollywood to be in Hollywood. You don't need to create stories in Hollywood in order to launch your production. And I teach that kind of entrepreneurship. So, and I model that entrepreneurship. So it's really important for me to want to live in a place and work in a place that means something to me, which is North Carolina. So I moved here with the intention of becoming a resident and making product here and teaching the next crew base and growing it and attracting more industry here. And I think that that's the goal, you know, teaching students at the School of the Arts and modeling the fact that they can have their career here is really important for them to stay where they want to be.
But can you reach the level of your typical Hollywood producer or a Hollywood director or Hollywood cinematographer or whatever the area of the profession is? Can you reach it from an outpost, from someplace outside of Hollywood? Can you make those connections necessary to get people to work for you, stars to be in your film, people to distribute your film, etc.?
Well, I would say when I lived in LA, most of those connections that I made were at festivals. So they weren't even there. And actually, for the first 5 years of moving out of Hollywood, I don't think anyone noticed I was gone. They thought I was still there because it's all over the phone. And you might go there to visit, to have meetings, but a lot of those connections, definitely in the independent world, were made in the international marketplace, the Cannes Film Festival, Toronto, Sundance. If you're really on the circuit, you're almost never home anyway, so, unless you're making a product. So I wouldn't pick where you want to live, learn how to make stories that matter, and the industry will find you if the product's good.
So, Guy, when our incentives declined a couple of years ago, we did lose productions. TV shows actually pull up stakes and move to Georgia or South Carolina or elsewhere. So we're in competition with those states. What do states, including ours, have to do to stay competitive regionally and nationally? Is it all about the money?
Sadly, yes. Maybe it's not sad. I mean, again, I think a lot of folks think of movies and television from their own perspective, and that is an entertainment industry, something that they go and enjoy and, you know, escape, if you will. But for those who work within the industry, it is a business. And while Lauren, yes, would love with her projects to do it because it's a passion project or for the art form, she would quickly tell you at the end of the day, if they don't make money off of that project, then she's in trouble. That's probably the best way to put it, Lauren.
That is true.
So there, it is a business. And because of that, just like a furniture manufacturing company, just like a data center, all of those, just like banking headquarters, you know, everything that we look at on a quote unquote traditional economic development side, that's the same within the film industry. And a production is going to go where it makes the most sense for them financially, and then they will figure out a way to make it work creatively.
Guy Gaster is the director of the North Carolina Film Office. He's here with Susie Hamilton from the Film Partnership of North Carolina and Lauren Vilcek from the School of the Arts. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about filmmaking in North Carolina. We evidently have, over the years, assembled a critical mass of people, or they come and go because our incentives have come and gone, but they're back right now. And we'll talk about what this means as we go through the hour for you as a film goer and a citizen, and for people who may be interested in being in the industry. And we talked, Guy Gaster is with us. He's the director of the North Carolina Film Office. And you've already talked about how we are offering today a 25% rebate on qualifying expenses and purchases made by people who are here to make movies and television shows and other productions in the state. And that includes commercial production, by the way. And it comes from a fund, I'm told, of about $31 million a year. How does that compare, Guy, with what we've offered in the past?
Yes. So right now, our state starts with an allocation of $31 million. I think at this point, those of your listeners who have been following along, it's probably key to note here that that funding is designated as recurring. So when we have a stalemate on the state budget, like we do right now, thankfully, we're able to continue to promote North Carolina as a filming destination and a place that people can come and make their projects. We're not necessarily caught up in the, hey, a new budget has not been passed. How it relates, there's a lot of ways that the program operates the same way, but ultimately, it was looked at in the previous version, which was a refundable tax credit, as there was viewed as no annual cap on what was available. Now we start with a $31 million allocation, and those funds can roll over. We have projects that will not reach their full rebate amount that they're pre-approved for. Sometimes when it's slow, you know, at a time during COVID or the writer's strikes, writers and actors strikes, not all the money was necessarily allocated during those times. So, you know, the 31's basically a placeholder, if you will, for how we get started each fiscal year.
So we have a Facebook comment from one of our listeners, Eric, who says it would be fantastic to hear whether North Carolina might ever transition to a transferable tax credit model. I know nothing about that, so I'm sure that one of you does. He says our investment group, which explored a 500-acre studio campus in Concord, the Philip Morris property, advocated for such a model used in places like Georgia, where billions, with a B, in revenue have been the result. Unlike North Carolina, Georgia and New York also built permanent infrastructure to accommodate regular visiting productions. What's your take on that, Guy?
Yeah, we certainly have permanent infrastructure here in our state. As you alluded earlier in the program, it is centered there in Wilmington. We've got CineSpace Studios, but we've just had a fairly new property open up, Dark Horse Stages. And all of that was private money that went to build permanent soundstage space. In terms of the transferable tax credit, my understanding, North Carolina has never in any industry offered a transferable tax credit, and it's something that
What is a transferable tax
credit? So a transferable tax credit would be basically receive a piece of paper, a note, that is a tax credit, and then you go and sell that tax credit or transfer it to another entity. In Georgia, some of those are some of the larger corporations like a Home Depot. It's also some of our celebrities, if you will, or athletes. Anyone who has higher taxes can then buy those tax credits and apply them themselves. So they may get be able to, let's say they have a $20 million tax debt, they could possibly buy a $20 million tax credit from one of these productions, but only pay $15 million for it. So again, that's something that it's not film specific, just like the other parts that Susie talked about. This is a thinking overall within the state and not having an interest in that kind of tax program.
So, Susie, the governor recently announced that 4 independent feature-length films have been approved for North Carolina Film and Entertainment grants, which will create more than 3,800 jobs and likely spend in excess of $131 million. The TV show Top Chef, as I mentioned, is shooting in Charlotte as we speak, and it was approved a rebate of up to $2.5 million by the state. That's separate from the $1.2 million incentive provided by the Charlotte Regional Visitors Authority, and for in exchange for which we the city gets verbal mentions during the show over time. Product placement. Also, they have to. They also have
they didn't call it soap operas for nothing, did they?
That's right. They also have to do some features on local history. They're going to film in local restaurants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's $3.7 million in incentives going to a television show on Bravo, of all places. How does that compare to what a production like Top Chef will bring into an area here, both in terms of employment opportunities and taxes paid by those employees, money spent on meals and on hotel rooms and rental cars, et cetera, and the value of the promotion that this region will receive as a result of their airing it from here? Talk about that, Susie.
That might be a better question for Guy, only okay. In terms of Guy knows what the total spend, or it would have a better sense of what the total spend is for Top Chef. But in terms of the job creation, I mean, we know that any series that goes on, it's not a one and done sort of day, you know, 1 week shoot sort of thing. The longer term series productions are the ones that provide a lot of consistency in employment, a lot of consistency in spending in the local area where it takes place. But I'm going to let Guy take a shot at that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, as far as the direct spend from a state standpoint, they are committing to spend $10 million directly in the state. That is hiring those film professionals that are helping bring the show to life. It's also spending money with local businesses. And from a, you know, added value standpoint, that show will travel the region and will highlight many aspects of North Carolina's culinary scene overall. And those are, I mean, in a way you could look at it as, you know, the state and the city are paying for a commercial, if you will, for their area. Long term, we hope that we see those restaurants that are featured, those chefs that come in, that they are highlighted and that they will see an uptick in business. I think that there's opportunities for a crop like sweet potatoes to show what can be used, how they can be used differently. And does that then result in more sweet potatoes being sold? You know, that's what we're looking at. It's from a what does this show give back standpoint on those non-tangibles. It's one of the better examples of it because they are truly going to highlight the area and culinary scenes. And most of those will be places that fans or viewers of the show will be able to visit themselves.
Yep. I watched that show and I got to tell you that they did a couple of seasons ago in Milwaukee, a city that I've never given two seconds of thought about, and I almost called a realtor because they made it look great. And we have about 150 people who live here, who move here every day to Charlotte. I'm not sure that we can afford to look great in Top Chef. Susie, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I think what's interesting about this particular project is that it involves state and local incentives. It is really unusual for local incentives to be, you know, local government to participate. But in this case, I think because of what Guy has described, it is like it's like a big commercial for the region of the state, and that really it's a really great investment on behalf of Charlotte and Mecklenburg County to recognize that and to ask for those things to be included and folded into the storyline of the show.
Lauren, let's talk about critical mass, because one of the things that happens as more and more productions come here, people decide to stay here, or people who are already interested in filmmaking and maybe had to go out of state to do their work and now do it here, And you build up this coterie of people who are available and who are professionals who know what they're doing. And so it's easier for filmmakers to come here and do this. And you're developing new filmmakers because you're at School of the Arts. When people think of movies and television, they generally think of the people in front of the camera. But there are far more people behind the camera than there will ever be in front of that camera. Are most of the people, young people who come to School of the Arts, looking to be behind the camera?
Most of them are. Now, the School of the Arts has a top drama school as well. So that covers the front of the camera. But in the School of Filmmaking, we're all behind the camera. So producers, directors, screenwriters, cinematographers, editors, all the heads of department that it takes to put a film together. And then, of course, there's the hundreds of crew members. To give you an indication, on The Bard, which we just finished shooting, we had 500 extras, just people in front of the camera that are not actually speaking roles. So that does include the speaking roles, the leads, the secondary roles. And then, of course, there's another 200 people behind the camera. 98% of them were North Carolina, which is, of course, a mission of mine. And many of them said because of the strikes, a lot of them hadn't worked in 8 months. Brought the Bard there. We're about to start Widow, which is another film that I was able to bring here, away from other states. We'll be starting that soon, and we'll just keep going one after the other.
When Susie, when times were flush, incentives were rolling out of the State House, and TV shows like One Tree Hill and Army Wives and Homeland were all shooting in North Carolina, the region did build up this critical mass of people behind the scenes, and that includes trades like carpenters and painters and costumers and prop people, even actors who maybe got a one-line part or a two-line part, or certainly were extras in the background. Where does that talent pool stand today, and how important is it as an incentive unto itself?
Economic developers in any function will tell you that the most important thing is workforce. They can decide they want to go to North Carolina or New Jersey or Florida, but if the workforce isn't there, there's no point in making those changes. So workforce is critical. We did see a slide in the number of film professionals we had in North Carolina in the 20 teens during that more tumultuous time. And one of the functions for the film partnership, one of the concepts behind it was that we needed to begin to rebuild our crew base in North Carolina. We had a lot of second and third generation film professionals now that are aging out, or had relocated permanently to other places. So it's important to share that craft and support the institutions that are already educating the students, like UNCSA, Cape Fear Community College, Winston-Salem State University, and many others across the state, where the public is already participating in educating those students.
I don't know whether this is a question for you, Susie, or for Guy Gaster, but as we've all mentioned, film productions come and go. But if you build up this critical mass of people, like the people in the trades I just mentioned, and even people who are grips and lighters and dolly operators, etc., they stay here. They buy homes. They rent
They do.
apartments. They pay taxes. They buy groceries. And they do it even when the film productions stop. There may be a fallow period here and
That's
there.
right.
Has the value of that been calculated and explained to policymakers over time?
Well, there's a lot of anecdotal information, and I'll jump in real quick and then I'll let Guy tackle that a little too. But I can tell you anecdotally that during that period, I would be dropping my daughter off at school, and mothers and fathers too would come to me in the parking lot and say, my husband or my wife, they're in Atlanta or they're, in New York. And, when are we going to bring film back to North Carolina? This is our home. We want to work where we live. We want to raise our families here. And it split up a lot of families during that period to have one spouse gone weeks at a time because there were no alternatives to work in North Carolina during that period. So a lot of anecdotal information, but you know, as far as it being quantified, I'm not entirely sure, but you can tell a difference today.
It would seem easy to quantify, is it?
It would seem so, but it's not, unfortunately, on trying to figure who those individuals are. Again, it's not the same situation of, you know, if you have a banking headquarters that is going to relocate to Charlotte and then you start to see what those specific numbers are from the one company. You know, we don't have that one overall place where that can be tracked. So it does come down, as Susie mentioned a little bit, to those anecdotes. I can say, you know, you were asking what our figures are right now. We've got over 3,700 film professionals that are registered in our online directory. That is a tool that we keep here in the film office and use to show producers like Lauren and decision makers how they can make the project in the state and what that crew base is, what that depth is.
Lauren, you've already said that you don't have to go to Hollywood to be a filmmaker. You can stay, you can pick a place to live and make your movie, and as long as you know how to network and do what it is that you do. But this next generation of filmmakers coming out of your film school and other film schools, and the School of the Arts Film School is either 8th or 10th in the nation, depending That's upon correct. Which survey you look at. But are the young people coming out, are their employment prospects in this field better or worse than previous generations when you look on the one hand at the increasing need for content as streaming services multiply versus the fact that AI is coming in and may take some of these jobs away. So are their prospects better or worse?
I think they're better because I believe in choice and autonomy. So AI is a tool that they'll use to streamline their craft, but they're storytellers. And the more ability they have to choose their lifestyle, choose where they want to live and create those stories, the better. So we're just engaged at every level to make it financially attractive for them, to facilitate those choices, to prove to them that entrepreneurship is key, to understand that it's a business and that they're responsible for living, working, and creating and investing where they want to live. And I think North Carolina is great for that.
Lauren Vilcek is an independent film producer and entertainment attorney, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Also the Assistant Dean of Graduate Studies at the School of Filmmaking at the School of the Arts here in North Carolina. Susie Hamilton is with us, President and CEO of the Film Partnership, and Guy Gaster, Head of the Film Office. Coming right back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and Habitat Charlotte Region. Since 1983, Habitat Charlotte Region has partnered with more than 5,000 families through financial education, homeownership, and critical home repair. More information at habitatcharlotteregion.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. We're talking about film in North Carolina. Incentives coming and going, they're back. Productions coming and going, they're back. Guy Gaster is here. He's director of the North Carolina Film Office. Susie Hamilton is president and CEO of the Film Partnership of North Carolina. She, along with Lauren Vilcek, are founding members of that organization. And Lauren is with us. She is associate dean in the School of Filmmaking at UNC School of the Arts and an independent film producer. Susie, with or without a college degree, filmmaking, film workers are looking to make a good living. Can you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, for sure you can. We start our intern program out. That's what's unique about the Film Partnership of North Carolina is that we raise money and we actually pay people to work on live film and television production sets under the tutelage of a department head, a mentor, a professional crew member, if you will. So yeah, there's definitely a gainful future for people at all levels of work within film and television production. I wouldn't want to delve into pay ranges because I'm not sure I would get those correct, but they are they can get into the hundreds to thousands of dollars a week in income for people that are at the higher end of the production levels.
You caught my attention. Where do I sign? So last
God
year,
shaking his head like, I don't know about that, but yeah, it's very lucrative, and it's very trade based in many cases. It's a learned skill. It's passed from person to person, so to speak.
Well, that's interesting too. It's also passed family to family. And one of the things that your organization and Lauren has been involved in is trying to diversify job opportunities in the film industry in North Carolina. Last year, the Film Partnership, I think, received, $500,000 in new funding from the state to help it, quote, cultivate a diverse pipeline of interns for jobs in the film sector. That was last year.
Well, 2023.
That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And that word, that nine-letter word, is one of those dirty words now, diversity, because the current administration seems to have a war on diversity, equity, and inclusion from every aspect of our realm, from public to private. Was that $500,000 a one-time thing just for 2024? And if not, how has it been affected by the current political climate?
Well, we haven't had any impacts yet. The money was awarded in October of 2023. You're correct in that we were given access to it in 2024. But our reference to diversity is largely based on access. As you've noted, the trades within film and television production have been passed from, say, father to son, or mother to daughter, or father to daughter. It has stayed within a family, so to speak. And so those people had an introduction already into the field. They had access to film and television production opportunities. What the Film Partnership of North Carolina has done is create a pipeline for interested parties where they can sign up. We work with them through training opportunities and onboarding opportunities, some safety training, things of that nature. Some people come to us that have already had some education, like they've worked, they've gone to school at UNCSA, or they've worked in smaller roles on productions, but don't have any really ready introduction or access. And that's what the partnership does, is give them access to those opportunities and those people that can train them in the field. So, we've not dropped any language, we've not added any language, but that is the premise on which we function. We believe that everyone of any race, gender, ethnicity, we believe that they should have access to the industry and an opportunity to perform in it if that is something that they choose to do.
And Lauren, that's because filmmakers have stories to tell, and their stories are different, and their points of view are different depending upon their life experience. It's partly to do to ethnicity and racial backgrounds, but there are all kinds of things that make things different. Is that not key to keeping people's interest as audience members, going to movies and watching television? Because if you just watch the same thing over and over again, you'd stop watching.
Exactly. I mean, we're enriched in our experience. The entertainment business is about creating not a widget, but an experience. And our experiences need to be enriched by the people in our community, the people outside of our community. If you can't travel, you can travel through these experiences. So as an educator, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, I'm constantly looking for something that's different and a unique spin.
We have a Facebook comment from a woman named Courtney. North Carolina's cost of living is much better than Atlanta, New York, LA, etc. So even though we lost people after the original incentives expired, we will have people rushing back here if we have competitive enough incentives. Are policymakers seeing it through that same lens, Guy?
I hope so. There's certainly we certainly continue to have policymakers that don't believe in incentives overall. They you know, don't think that NASCAR should get incentives. They don't think that some of these other industries that the state focuses on and tries to bring opportunities to should get incentives. So that does play into it. You know, there has been a welcome reception and a willingness to listen a little more about how this money is being spent and what the state's return continues to be. And there's even a subcommittee with the state legislature's Economic Development and Foreign Affairs Caucus that's been formed that's looking at it. So I think that we are getting new eyes that are seeing it and hopefully are listening and understanding what opportunities there are for the state within this industry and how the incentive plays a role in that.
And I'd like to jump in there, Mike, if I might. Sorry. Sure. But and to Guy's point, you know, the film discussion has always been a bipartisan one. I think it's the caucus that was just created that he mentions is a bipartisan caucus, intentionally so. I work very closely with legislators across the aisle during my time there and still do today. We have a ton of support on both sides of the aisle. So that's what's been unique about the incentives discussion overall is that there are a lot of folks out there you wouldn't think that, you know, maybe on the left side of the aisle that don't support them either. But it's generally been a bipartisan discussion.
So we've been talking, Lauren, about bringing people into the industry. Let's talk about your journey into this industry because you were a corporate attorney. You were not in the film business. And a friend, as I'm told, asked you for your advice. They were a film student, I believe, at UCLA, and they wanted to get their film shopped around and wanted to get into to have doors open so they could pitch their film to people who are decision makers. So you asked to see their business plan, and you were greeted with a blank stare. And that's when you knew that you could help creative people learn the business side of the film business, because in film and show business, there are two words at play: film, creative, show, creative, and business. Correct. It's about the bottom line. So you moved later into producing your own films. Now you teach at the School of the Arts. So here's a question you've never heard before. What do producers do?
They are the biggest catch-all. It's really soup to nuts. It's everything from creating the story to hiring the crew to raising the money to making sure a set psychologist in some ways, making sure that everybody is working together, doing their best work, creatively involved, feel supported. They manage the post-production, and then that really starts marketing and distribution and sales. And so you're on a film for at least 3 or 4 years in the process. So it's a really long engagement.
And part of that process is getting film producers like Lauren to bring their productions here as opposed to someplace else, Guy. Is it an active thing on your part and other people in the state where you go out and you actually pitch these individuals, come and do your movie or your TV show here? Or do they come to you looking for locations and then that's when the nitty gritty begins?
Yeah, sure. It's a mix of both, as you would probably expect. We're certainly active and are trying to get out in front, keep our both introduce North Carolina to folks and those that have shot, help remind them of what makes our state a great place to do the work. We're constantly meeting with the studios and in discussions with them on projects that could work best for North Carolina. And then yes, there's reactive pitching as well. We will have someone who will contact us, who will say, hey, I just had a producer colleague who shot in your state and said they had a great experience. I've got a project I'm starting to put together. Tell me more about it. So yes, it's a combination, both proactive and reactive pitching.
Of course, if you're doing like a show like Ozark, you don't need to be at Myrtle Beach or the Outer Banks. But if you're shooting Outer Banks, the TV show, then you would presume that you would be shooting it on the Outer Banks, but they didn't. They shot it in South Carolina. So tell me that why.
Correct. And I think that as North Carolinians, when we hear the word Outer Banks, we also think of a place around Manio, Kill Devil Hills, you know, that area. And to be quite honest, if Outer Banks would have shot in North Carolina, it probably would have been in Wilmington. So if we're talking about, you know, does a name follow a place? No, not necessarily. You know, another great example, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Has Missouri in the title of the show, and it filmed primarily in Silva, North Carolina, nowhere close to Missouri, if you will. So, I mean, that's part of what makes this industry unique is that you do look for where the best opportunities are to portray the look that you're going for overall. It does not have to be in an exact place. And if I'm being honest, in the early days in my job, we had a harder time landing North Carolina-based projects than we did somewhere else. And I used to laugh and say, we look too much like what the subject was supposed to. But there have certainly been North Carolina projects that just because it was written here or set here, easily went and shot elsewhere. And we've done the same. I mean, you also mentioned Hunting Wives. That is supposed to be in East Texas. And the Charlotte area fills in quite nicely and portrays that look very well and
really?
Very convincingly.
They have that many trees in East Texas, really?
They do, yes, okay. Yeah.
The Film Partnership of North Carolina is not a government agency, but Susie, you came to your job as president and CEO by way of state government, first in the Cooper administration, as I mentioned. You served as Secretary of Natural and Cultural Resources. You also served three terms as a state representative from District 18, which just happens to be it happens to include the filmmaking capital of the East Coast, Wilmington. All that seems to be a natural precursor to this position that you have now. Did your previous job positions, how did they position you to do what you do now? That's the question.
Well, that is a great question. Well, my time as Secretary of Natural and Cultural Resources, the number one thing that came out of that was my relationship with Lauren Vilcek. During that period, the Governor Cooper, reinstated the Task Force on Film for North Carolina. And we put a group of folks together that included both Guy and Lauren and 23 or 24 other folks, professionals from the industry. And one of the things we recognized during that period of time of study, what had happened in North Carolina, we realized that we had seen a reduction in the number of professional crew members that we had in the state. So one of the number one things that came out of it was the need to create a pipeline. And that's where the idea for the film partnership was started. And Darla McLamory, who is the business agent for IOTC 491 that represents North Carolina, South Carolina, and Savannah, is our third partner, founding partner for this. And she helps us identify producers that are willing to encourage our interns and work with our interns and, you know, some of the training to get them onto set.
IOTC is the one of the unions involved in filmmaking and also television and stage. Guy, let me flip the coin for just a second before we run out of time. The Carolina Journal, which is published by the John Locke Foundation, which is an independent nonprofit think tank that promotes limited government, individual liberty, and free markets, says that tax credits that have been in place since 2005 to attract TV and film and commercial production have failed to deliver the economic benefits promised by state officials. They say, quote, the actual employment impact is minimal, that incentives do not spur economic growth. They can even cost states money. And in some, they say that film incentives are ineffective corporate welfare and recommends eliminating them in favor of broader tax reforms that benefit all businesses.
Comment. I just would say, look, it's the nature of the business. And I know that our friends there at the Carolina Journal would like to see the state possibly go to no taxes. But for that, I would point to the state of Texas, who has no tax, but yet their state still has to offer incentives, be it in the film industry, as well as other areas of economic development. So the thought that just because you lower corporate taxes, business will magically come, the evidence points otherwise. There are states, again, Texas, you look at Florida, that have to offer incentives to still get that business. And that's not just film, that is all business. So it's one that I think you need to be aware of.
I have 10 seconds.
Yes.
I guess the question is it a wash? If we stopped offering those incentives, we would clearly lose the film business in North Carolina to other states. Would therefore we lose money overall?
Yes, ultimately, yes.
Okay. Guy Gaster is director of the North Carolina Film Office. Susie Hamilton is president and CEO of the Film Partnership of North Carolina. And Lauren Vilchick is one of the founding members of that, an independent film producer and assistant dean of graduate studies at the School of Filmmaking at UNC School of the Arts. Thanks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.